This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome to the Arrowhead Addict Podcast. Please welcome your hosts, Patrick Allen and Matt Verderam.
Welcome in. It's the Arrowhead Addict Podcast, Thanksgiving special edition. And since things are special, we've got a special guest. Patrick Allen, Matt Verderam, joined today, very excited. Jeff Schwartz, former NFL offensive lineman, former Chief. Jeff, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today? You getting ready for Thanksgiving?
I am. Yeah, should be a good Thanksgiving. A couple of days. Got the turkey defrosting right now. We'll marinate it up tomorrow, put in the deep fryer on Thursday, and watch a little football. And look, no Chiefs stress this weekend, right? No Chiefs game. Get a little, just enjoy football as is and get back at it next weekend.
And unfortunately, we all have to watch the Lions on Thanksgiving Day, which is always a little bit of a damper on things.
Yeah, but you have to also watch the Bears. And so that might be a little bit worse, who have lost five in a row with a point differential of negative 67 over those last 5 weeks. So that might be worse.
I got to tell you, like, I'm based here in Chicago, so I've got to watch that crap because my wife's family is going to be watching it. And they're actually going to be rooting for the Bears, which is even sadder. Yeah. I am going to openly be rooting for Detroit. I want them to win their first game.
Yes.
And I want to see if they leave Nagy on the tarmac. Like, if they lose that game after losing to a backup quarterback at home in ridiculous fashion, and then they go lose to Detroit, just can them. Can them right there. Just let Mike Glazer be the interim the rest of the way. That team is such a shit show. It's unbelievable. Like, just let it happen. But you know, I don't mind the Chiefs having a bye week this week, to be honest. Like, I could use the emotional
I've never had a bye week on Thanksgiving. This is actually really awesome to have a bye, because normally for Thanksgiving, you're trying to shuffle having practice while also getting some time with your family. And so, you know, typically they move kind of the schedule from Friday to Thursday, Thursday to Friday. They kind of switch schedules and you're trying to do this and that. And now the Chiefs players just get to relax this weekend. They get to have a Thanksgiving, see their families, and probably not even travel. You know, a lot of times guys leave town, but I don't know what the COVID restrictions are for that. But now that you get to stay home and enjoy Thanksgiving, eat whatever they want. There's no weigh-in on Friday. It would be nice to have this weekend off of your NFL player.
Yeah, absolutely. No Chiefs stress. That's a good thing. So Jeff, you know, as our listeners and viewers are coming in through YouTube, and thank you to Mike in Sweden, who gave us 109 SEK. Is that how you say it? We appreciate that. Thank you. I think that's like $12 US. Not too bad. Not too bad at all. I like seeing the triple digits up there. Appreciate all you out there in the chat.
The international flavor.
Oh, yeah. We always get the international folks in for when we do these early ones. So, Jeff, now obviously you're 8 years in the NFL. You've got a podcast of your own, I think we should tell everybody about. Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You. And I know you do some work a million other places. Can you just kind of where can everyone find you?
Yeah. So my podcast is Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You. And I try to tell people for months now, not months, but weeks, the Chiefs will be fine. So we talked about that on today's episode. We have a gambling episode on Thursdays. The NFL has been rough for everybody. Rough for me too. College football has been really good. So make sure to check that out on Thursdays. And then I work for Fox Sports as well. For Sirius XM, I do Pac-12 radio Monday through Friday. Fill in on Mad Dog. I'll be a Mad Dog Thursday morning for Thanksgiving as well. So there's times you can find me all over the place, but I'm here to talk some Chiefs. I love it.
Let's do it. Let's definitely talk some Chiefs. And by the way, you do work everywhere. You also used to do a podcast with this guy over here, Matt Verderam.
Yeah.
Stand on Stacking the Box, which people should also subscribe to.
I always enjoyed that. We had a lot of fun. It was perfect year to work together. The Chiefs won the Super Bowl.
Yes, so, it was. Yeah,
it really worked out. We had a lot of fun, and Jeff and I have remained good friends. So it's been a lot of fun. Talked throughout the year. Happy to have Jeff come on. We had his brother Mitch earlier on to preview the season. So we're really going through the family tree here. But it's been a lot of fun. This year was not so much fun early, as the Chiefs basically sleptwalked through the first couple months of the season. We talked about it all the time, Jeff, on this show. And I know you and I have talked about it, you know, just away from the show. Like, it's been a year where it's just like, what is going on? I mean, they just cannot get on the same page. They can't get right. Well, now all of a sudden they seem to have gotten on the same page. And not that everything's perfect, not that everything's rosy, but they seem to have found themselves. And suddenly 7-4 and in first place and not feeling so bad as they head into the bye week.
Look, I never bought the idea that the Chiefs, A, forgot how to coach. Everyone said, oh, cover two. Andy Reid doesn't know what he's doing. Doesn't know what he's doing. Okay. Guys, come on. Guy's been coaching 20 years as a head coach. Pat Mahomes forgot how to play football. The Chiefs defense just forgot how to rush the passer. Just take a deep breath, everyone. These are professionals, right? They understand how to make changes. And for 3 or 4 weeks, this team did not look like they had the previous three seasons. But they fixed some of the issues defensively, right? Let's start there. Less man coverage. Thank you, right? Zone coverage, cover two. Sorensen, bye-bye. Gay's healthy. Gay's playing more. Sneed's healthy. Sneed's playing more. Fenn's playing more. They figured it out, right? Chris Jones back inside now where he should have been the entire time. They fixed that issue. Frank Clark somehow found a pass rush all of a sudden. Ingram has been helpful. Like, they've found ways to change this because they're pros. They've been in the NFL, the coaches, for a long time. So the players, they're prideful. They don't want to suck either. And offensively, look, they stopped turning the ball over. There's still some bad turnovers. Oh, my. That Kelsey one was bad. And they've just kind of gone back to taking what the defense gives them and then running the football. I beg the Chiefs every single week to – we have a good offensive line, guys. The Chiefs can run the football. Like, just run forward. Have them move vertical up the field. And so they figured out some of the issues. Now, it's not all perfect. I get that. But I never bought the idea that they forgot how to play good football. Everyone has rough patches. You remember, was it 2014, Matt, when the Patriots came into Arrowhead and lost that Monday Night Football game? And everyone's like, famously, Tom Brady forgot how to play football. He's done. And like, they won the Super Bowl that year. Like, just deep breath, everyone. So, but look, we're a reactionary culture. We're so up and down that it's hard to see the light. And my whole thing was like, look, the offense stops killing themselves. And it wasn't great on Sunday for, they had turnovers, they had penalties. I had thought one was bad and one was okay. Mental errors here and there, drop passes. I mean, it's not perfect, but the defense has played better and they're right where they should be, 7-4, leading the division.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that Cowboys game, because I thought it was, obviously it was a defensive masterpiece, but probably the most complete game that they played despite some of the hiccups on offense. What was your reaction to that game, Jeff, on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, obviously moving Chris Jones back inside has been very helpful because he's really good in defensive tackle. I didn't really buy that defensive end issue. Look, I understand, okay, if you want to move him out there because you have a young defensive tackle that can kind of not replace his production but can give you some production and you're lacking an outside rush, fine. But they didn't have that guy. So it wasn't like they were putting – so they moved Chris Jones to a worse position and they replaced him with someone much worse. So you basically made two positions worse. So I didn't get what they did. They put him back inside. I mean, Zach Martin, guys, the best guard in the NFL. And he beat Zach Martin handily for a sack one time. He beat the left guard. I mean, he is – and when you have that pressure up the middle, it makes quarterbacks a little jittery, right? And we saw the Cowboys – now, the Cowboys had offensive line issues of their own just injury-wise. But we saw their game plan. They were fearful of the Chiefs' pass rush. They called the game fearful of what the Chiefs could do up front. And when that happens, it makes everyone better. It makes your secondary better. It makes your linebackers better. I think they're stopping the run as Gay has played more and Bolton's getting used to playing in the NFL. Like, they're just – their pieces are coming together. It's okay sometimes. It takes young players a little bit of time to figure out how to play in the NFL. And that, to me, defensively, the Chiefs defense, guys, doesn't have to be perfect. They just can't be terrible. Get some stops, force some turnovers, force some punts. We're not expecting you to hold teams to 9 points every week, but just don't allow 47 points. Like, help the offense out a little bit.
Yeah, it's funny. I wrote my column on it on Monday about their defense, and I kind of tongue in cheek, bro. Like, they're a defensive first team right now. And I mean, and yes. I know, look, realistically, if they're going to win a Super Bowl, it's going to be about Mahomes and Kelsey and Hill. But right now, their defense is leading them, which is impossible to believe based off what we saw the first month of the year. Like, impossible. But, you mentioned it a little bit, Jeff, and I wanted to touch on it. Like, you look at these linebackers, Gay and Bolton specifically. This is the first time in years the Chiefs have had linebackers who really make a difference. Again, Anthony Hitchens is a good player. He's been serviceable for them. He's been solid. But they've had to hide Ben Neiman, and they've had to hide other guys at times, right? Like, because they just – either they can't cover, they're not good against the run, they've got to try different things, they've got to use these unique packages. The Chiefs now have two linebackers who are young guys, along with Anthony Hitchens, who they can just put out there and be like, all right, go get that guy. And Gay can run sideline to sideline as well as anybody. And Bolton is a hammer coming down the pike, right? I mean, he fills gaps as well as anybody they've had in a long time. And so all of a sudden, you have those two guys, and it's not a liability. Like, have you noticed the tight ends aren't killing them anymore? I mean,
I think part of that is they've taken Sorensen off the field, so that helps against tight ends.
Yeah.
They're playing more zone coverage, so they're not in man coverage as much. You're not worried about tight ends one-on-one against a safety or against a linebacker. But the Chiefs have modernized their defense. Well, linebackers that can run. They have to be able to run. They have to be able to run, and they found guys who could run it, and you're leaving them on the field in nickel situations now, which they had not done in the past. So you have guys that can run and get in space. There was a play – it was a third and two, I want to say. They threw the ball out to Zeke, and I think Bolton ran him down on the sidelines for like a minus one. The Chiefs have not had linebackers that can do that in the past. And they've saw what Tampa Bay did to them, right, with David and White. I mean, you have to have guys that can run because the game is so spread out now. And, again, just give them time to coach these young guys up. I mean, we've talked about it. The draft classes between basically Mahomes and 2 years ago were bad. But they filled in guys now with these last couple of classes that can play, that fit what they want to do. And give Spags credit. He decided to change up what they do, right? They were a blitz-heavy team. They were a man coverage team. More zone now. Simplify things. Keep guys in front of you. Don't give it big plays. Yeah, you might not pressure as much. But if Chris Jones is rushing the passer like that, you don't need to bring pressure. So they found a way to make it work with all their pieces.
Totally agree.
Yeah, I think that's the big change from earlier in the season is they weren't getting any kind of pressure, even when they blitzed. And now that you've got Chris Jones back in the middle, now that you've got Frank Clark healthy, I mean, he's looked as good in these last few games as I've seen him in a while, consistently just getting after the quarterback. And if they're able to do that, you see on the back end, Charvarius Ward coming back, Fenton, those guys are covering. Dan Orlovsky had a great breakdown on Twitter just about or it might have been Bollinger. Can't remember which. They both put great breakdowns out of their money. It was Bollinger. Bollinger, yeah. Just the way that the Chiefs were covering, they were all over it, and their technique was sound. And I this is one of those games where sometimes the Chiefs play well on defense, and it's like you look at the other team and you're like, okay, well, they weren't executing. They played a poor game on offense. This is a game where you really can't blame Dak and the Cowboys. I mean, they just got their butts kicked. It was the Chiefs. The Chiefs dictated that game on defense, and that they could have played four more quarters, and I don't think Dallas would have got a touchdown the way they were playing.
Yeah, and look, part of that is obviously what they did, but look, to be fair, there was a lot of drop passes, which sometimes you need to have in a game. Like, I don't feel bad for the Cowboys because of that, but they dropped some passes, some offensive line injuries. But the thing that bothers me about when we talk about just teams in general is they usually say, well, the Cowboys had guys hurt. Okay, well, then you should hold them to 9 points. Like, that's what you should do. You should play better if the other team is guys that are out. Like, what do you want the Chiefs to do? Give up 0 points? That seems unlikely. You have 9 points. That's what they should have done. They're missing their left tackle, who the Cowboys cannot win without. I think they're 14-16 when Tyron Smith hasn't played and started a game. They're down their two wide receivers. Zeke got beat up. The Chiefs should allow 9 points. That's what good teams do. And they took advantage of injuries. Like, that's what they should be doing. So the idea that we downgrade their performance because their guys missing. Jordan Love, they allowed 7 points at the very end. That's what they should do when Jordan Love is playing. Not allow points to a quarterback that's not very good. So the idea, again, that like this is should be a knock on the Chiefs. No, this is what they should do. They should play well against bad offenses.
Yeah, and I feel like, I've seen so many people say, well, they didn't have CeeDee Lamb. They did in the first half, and they scored 3 points. I mean, he was there for the first half of the game. They were missing Cooper. They were missing Tyron Smith, which are huge guys. Huge guys. But in the end, like, I also believe, too, the Chiefs in that game were playing so fast, and they were playing physical. And when you can constantly manufacture a pass rush with four guys, as the Chiefs were doing in that game, then they'd bring the occasional blitz. They brought Snead on a slot blitz. He got his hands on one pass. When you do that type of stuff, and God, Jeff, you could speak this way more than I could, considering your experience in the league. But when you see that, and you're getting there, and you're getting there, and you're getting there, and not even with sacks, just hurries and pressures, it speeds up everything on every play.
Yes.
Because you are, if you're Dak, you're expecting it to get there at some point. Maybe you're used to having 2.5 seconds. Now you're thinking I got 1 3/4 seconds. Yeah, I got. I've got to get rid of the ball. It screws up timing. It screws up everything on an offense, even on a play where maybe you don't get there, but you've been getting there over and over and over. Like, it starts to feed into, it speeds up the clock of, all right, the ball's got to be out. And maybe you get it out a half second before you normally would. You know, and all of a sudden, a guy who would normally come out of his break and he's open, well, he's just getting out of his break. And now the ball hits him off the front of the hands because he couldn't get open or he couldn't get around quick enough. All that stuff plays in. And early in that game, Kansas City was just all over Dak. I mean, they ended up with 5 sacks. But I thought that was part of the game, was it just they were off kilter from the start. And I think a lot of that had to do with the way Kansas City was getting home from jump.
But I also think it's important to know that it's not just the physical play, right? As you mentioned, the Cowboys' offense started calling plays like they were afraid of their offensive line. So, and my brother tweeted this out too, and I think he was exactly right. So all the downfield stuff is out of the playbook now. So you're getting underneath passes. You know, there's not time to have those deep developing passes where you can take advantage of the Chiefs' tendency since Andy Reid's been there to commit defensive pass interference or holding penalties. It blows my mind. I can't imagine a team has committed more in the last 8 years of defensive pass interference penalties or holding penalties. And that's all out because they don't have to guard for that long, right? Like there's no, they don't have to do that anymore. So that's where it also matters because it's Kellen Moore's like, oh God, we got to protect our quarterback. Let's go to a quick game. Let's get ball out quickly. And that's why it matters as well. It's not just a physical beatdown. It's how the play caller changes what the offense wants to be.
I want to talk a little bit about the offense in this game because it was a little disjointed. They looked pretty good early. They were moving the ball. They were running the ball. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was back. And then they kind of got a little disjointed, a little bit sloppy. The Kelce interception was terrible. Actually, I want to talk on that one real quick. A great effort by Byron Pringle to run down the interception on that play. And I wanted to get both of your opinions on this. Kelce kind of pouted. He pouted a little bit after he gave up that interception. And he was one of the only players that didn't run back. Does that bother you, like Jeff, as a player, when you see one of your teammates on a play like that, or you kind of understand that?
Not from him. I mean, yeah. I think his effort and his desire to win has been proven many times over. I don't think he thought the ball was intercepted. I think he's just like, oh, geez, I dropped a pass.
That's what I thought too.
And by that point, he's 15 yards away. But then he even realized what had happened. Yeah. And look, little effort plays like what Pringle did, who seems to be the number two wide receiver now. They're playing him a lot more. Is the difference sometimes in winning and losing, right? I mean, we famously saw DK Metcalf, right? Hawk down Buda Baker, I think it was, and that saved the touchdown there, and that led to no points. I think Arizona missed a field goal there. Right. And little plays like that are important. And those are like team culture plays, right? That's effort that you hope to teach, but you kind of have to have it inside of you, and players do feed off that. I'm not the Kelce thing. I don't know if people are making a big deal about that. That should not be a big deal.
No, I totally agree, actually. Completely, I thought that the same thing was, I think he just thought he dropped the ball.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like Jeff said, I think by the time he realized, turn around, I mean, you know, he's never going to catch him. I have no issue. I just had an issue with the fact that he's been dropping the ball. I mean, that's been the bigger thing, which is weird. He is not a guy throughout his career that drops passes. That has not been an MO for Travis Kelce. This year it has been. I mean, obviously, look, he's still having a great year. But I think with him, I don't think it was so much as a pout as much as he was pissed. I think he felt like, you know, that was the second drop he had in the game. But look, he also had some big catches in that game. But that game, and I said this right after the game as well. Like, I really feel like with the offense, when they were playing the Giants and the Packers and the Titans, they looked completely disjointed offensively. They looked out of rhythm, out of sync. They couldn't figure out a scheme. I mean, everything looked wrong. They had no confidence. They looked terrible. I did not feel that way in the Cowboys game. I thought they were fine. They just beat themselves. I mean, they dropped a bunch of passes. They had a couple big penalties that took them out of drives. Obviously, the turnovers. But I really, you know, I didn't get the feeling like it was like the Packers game or the Giants game. The Chiefs were moving the ball. They just short-circuited.
Here's the issue that happens, though, and why it's a little concerning that they keep having these problems. It kind of becomes your identity, right? And your identity becomes like, we just kind of keep making these mistakes. And it's not really about, when they play the Cowboys, but it's, you know, it's when they play a playoff game and they really haven't fixed some of these issues. And you're playing a good football team and it's like, oh, we should have won the game, but we kind of just didn't. Like, it obviously matters a lot more then than it might against the Cowboys. So they still need to, and it does, if you're a Chiefs fan, it should actually excite you that they're 7-4 leading the division and still have a lot to work on. Like, there's still things they can fix and still need to fix. And Andy Reid's great after a bye. I think they play the Broncos, right?
Denver
after
a bye. They get flexed Sunday night.
Yes, I saw that. So they're probably going to, you know, the win that game, be 8-4. I mean, there's just each week, I think you want to see the defense just, I mean, not the defense, but the offense just kind of fix some of their errors. And I think it will happen. I have faith it will happen. But they still, you know, turn the ball over too much. The drop passes, penalties on Tommy. I thought one of them was a bad call on Trey, but the other one was probably a holding. So, you know, and then Trey got a personal foul after he cussed out the ref. And then, I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I mean, that point was vicious. My kids were watching. I would have to turn it off. So just stuff like that. I mean, they had three unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. I mean, Fenton's like out there like motioning, like, I don't even know what that was. That was going to get called. I mean, that was fairly obvious. That whole sequence is interesting because Mike Prayer is like, well, they shouldn't call face masks. And you're like, well, it's a face mask. They should call it. Like, we see it happening right there. And he was arguing procedurally. I'm like, dude, just call it. You see, it's a face mask. So the sky judge is happening in the NFL. I wish they'd just admit they're doing it.
Oh, yeah. It always cracks me up. Like, and I get Prayer. Like, I understand where he's coming from the letter of the law, so to speak. And by the way, Epic, I saw you say Happy Thanksgiving from Canada. Thank you. Appreciate that. I would say the same to you, but I know up in Canada, you're not having a Thanksgiving. It drives me nuts. Like, we have so much technology now. And in the stadium, and this has been the case forever, but like, we have these huge, unbelievable video boards where they're showing this play, and Fenn is getting his head ripped off. And Prayer's like, they can't look at that. Why the hell not?
Right.
His helmet got ripped off his head.
I also love in college football, I think more than anything else, there's a review and they have the tiny screen you're looking at. They're like, the screen's like this big.
Yeah.
And obviously they're listening to someone on the headset who has more TVs, but it's just kind of funny that's the way this has gone down. It was the right call though. So yeah, just like cleaning up things like that, which Andy Reid does a great job of self-scouting. So he'll come back next week and maybe even – they probably had someone do it already, and maybe today or tomorrow they're meeting with the players before they head off for the week. Like, here, guys, here's what we need to work on. Here's what we're good at. Here's what we're bad at. And figuring out a way to get things kind of more or just kind of less mistakes on offense.
During the second half of that game, Jeff, did you feel like, and I know you mentioned earlier, you'd like to see them run the ball a little bit more. The offensive line, these guys can block nasty. I, as a fan watching that, I felt in the second half like, man, we could just put this away if we just go to the ground game. We're getting really great push. Clyde's running well. Were you feeling that as well? Do you think that they could have settled things down a little bit more on offense and gotten another score if they just committed to the run just a little bit more?
Oh, man. I'm always going to want to run the ball more. And there is, I think with this offensive line, run it forward. Like, the sideways, outside zone stuff from shotgun is not what they do well. This was the first game I thought all season they had only runs the offensive line was good at, which is downhill, like straight downhill. Any sort of gap runs, or they just ran inside zone, but more like just kind of just straight inside zone, kind of like almost like a dive. It wasn't even inside zone, just, you know, the back kind of step back, moments hand on the ball, he just went straight downhill. Look, Andy Reid is not going to run the football. It's not what they do. So any game we get where we get, and then it was 6, 7, 8 runs in a row at one point, but the first negative run, he's going to pass the ball. And they view, by the way, they view the RPO as a run. I mean, there was, I think, a time in the game they ran 4 straight RPOs, but threw 3 of the 4. So those count to them. You know, if Tyreek Hill gets 8 yards on RPO, that's a positive play. It's a good play. So they call more runs than we give them credit for, and Mahomes, for the most part, I think, does a really good job of figuring out where the advantage, whether it's going out to the edge or keeping the run play going. I like to see more of it. I think they have a fantastic run blocking offensive line, young players who, I mean, Creed is one of the best centers already. Trey Smith will be an All-Pro one day. Joe Tooney's been fantastic. They have dudes that can play. I wish they would do it more, but it's not what Andy Reid does. So I can't be that upset about it. I mean, it's not going to happen.
I do wonder. And first of all, I agree. Like my father every week screaming about why don't they run the ball? Why don't they run? I'm like, well, because that's not who they are. It's just not. Like for better or worse, it's not what they're going to do. And it drives me a little bit crazy too, especially when you watch and early in the game, Dallas is just getting blown off the ball. I mean, blown off the ball. The touchdown run by Kelce, he didn't get touched. They ran it from the 4-yard line and he literally didn't get hit until he was at the goal line because the entire offensive line was at the goal line.
Yeah. I got to say though, man, like whenever I see the Chiefs get cute on the, in the low red zone, I kind of cringe.
Oh, please preach it. Patrick and I was screaming about this a couple weeks ago when they played the Giants.
Like for years, it was really good. Like they always kind of were able to get in the last year, it's just not been as good. And especially when the offense is not flowing very well, you're kind of like, well, just let Pat Mahomes make it happen. Well, like, just let him do it. And it was a good play, though. It worked well.
And also, like, we've talked about this for years. In years past, they've not had the offensive line to line up on 3rd and 1 and 3rd and 2 and just run the ball. They do now. Especially, look, Orlando Brown's a very good run blocker, but the trio inside. Like, enough of this stuff where you're running, like, this zone scheme. Like, just run. Run power. Just run it. Like, there's no reason not to run behind those three guys. I really think in the playoffs, if they get into a game where they've got to burn some time, that's the way to do it. Like, now, and by the way, the last drive against the Cowboys, as bad as that offense was after the midway point of the second quarter, they got the ball with about 8 minutes left, and they pretty much ended the game. And a lot of that was running the ball. I mean, just pounding the football. Dallas couldn't stop them. I mean, Darrell Williams had an 11-yard run in there. Clyde had some nice runs in there. They did sprinkle in a pass here to Kelce. But, like, it was a lot of just, we're better than you up front. We're running you over. And I do think that is one thing in the playoffs that matters. And for people who say, well, no, not really. Go look at the AFC Championship game when they beat Tennessee. And they lined up in the second half of that game and just ran them over for the entire second half of the football game. You know, it's not as necessary maybe as it was in the mid-90s, but it still matters. It still matters you can execute a 4-minute drill. It does.
And it's, again, it's like not what they do, though. Like it's hard, I think, at times just to say, hey, we're going to do something we don't often do. We want it. We want them to do it. But they've, for years, have relied on Mahomes to be that guy. Because their offensive line, look, last year was beat up. They have not been the best run-blocking unit for a couple years now. But now that's obviously changed a lot. So maybe we'll see more of that. Because they did it. You're right. They did it. They tried to do it the second half of this game. And maybe moving forward, we see more of that as they trust them more in these situations.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's move on to, we're getting into the bye week here. Andy Reid, legendary, coming off of a bye, gets to get in there, tinker, make his adjustments. I'll start with you this time, Verderam. If you're Andy Reid and you're going into this bye week, what are you focusing on? What are you tinkering with? What are you adjusting for the second half of the season?
I'm doing everything I can to get them to stop beating themselves. Like, I really believe that, like, defensively, I wouldn't touch a damn thing. Like, I would just leave it alone. Offensively, I mean, I think they're second in offensive penalties taken. They're first in drops. Like, first isn't worst. And they are worst in turnovers. I mean, now, as far as schematically, I'd like to see them utilize Hill and Hardman's speed a little bit more. I think at times, and I just saw Reddy Whip just said, need more jet sweeps. Yeah. Like that's, look, I want to see them get to the edges a little bit more. I thought early in the game against Dallas, they were doing that and they were killing them. And then they went away from it. Like I'm not saying you got to do it 10 times a game, but I would like to see them, look, if teams are going to play this cover 2 shell where they're not going to let you get over the top, I think at some point you have to accept that a little bit and go, all right, fine. Well, how do we create explosive plays within those confines? Well, it's getting the ball to those guys with space and allowing them to run with the football. Like, I think that to me is something you have to do. It's also something, look, I'd be working on, and this kind of goes to what we talked about. If you run the ball effectively and you can start sucking up those linebackers, you can hit them in the second levels. You know, especially if those safeties are going to be dropping 15, 20 yards off the line of scrimmage and you can get a linebacker to suck up, hit him behind the linebacker. All this is stuff that Andy Reid, if he was listening to this conversation from the left, go, yeah, guys, I know. I get it. But I mean, that, if you're asking me, that's what I do. But I really just think they've got to stop killing themselves on offense. They stop doing that, they'll be fine.
It's that simple, right? But I don't know how you coach, like, stop dropping the ball and committing penalties. Right. You know, like, that's like, there's nothing to coach. It's just like, do you think Travis Kelce's just not practicing how to catch the ball? I'm sure he is. I mean, Mecole Hardman, this is what he's done for years. It's no surprise. Pat gave him a death stare in the first quarter when he dropped the pass.
Dropped that ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you look at even like the offseason, like, they need to get number two wide receiver in the worst way. Like, they, I don't know what their you know, the draft slot will be, anywhere from what, 20 to 32 around there. I mean, someone's got to help that. That's my guess, and maybe pass rusher too. But it's just they gotta find that. But I'm with you. Like, use the speed, use the offensive line. You know, kind of, I think they're getting back to some creative plays as well. That reverse was really nice early in the game. So I think they're back on what they, and again, Andy Reid's the only staff, and I played for Tom Coughlin, John Fox, Leslie Frazier. We're at the bye week. They told us what we were good and bad at. Like, we are good at these plays and we're bad at these plays. We're not running the plays we're bad at anymore. Throw them out. We're running the plays we're good at. And that's why I think they're good after byes, because they have some, they kind of throw their egos aside and say, hey, we're going to do what we're good at. Even if it's stuff that I don't like to call or I'm not used to calling, we're going to run what we're good at. And that's, I think, what makes them so good after bye weeks.
It's going to be very exciting. Let's get to the second half of the season here and just hand out some hardware for the midseason awards. Jeff, who's your offensive MVP on this sort of rocky first half of the season for the Chiefs?
Creed Humphrey.
I love it. I love it.
I mean, rookie center in this offense, they haven't missed a beat. Like, he's been fantastic.
Yeah, I was just going to say the interior of the offensive line. So I'm in lockstep with Jeff. I mean, look, I'll go differently, though, just because Jeff already covered that. Tyreek Hill is having an unbelievable season. Like, yes. Nobody's talking about it. He has, like, 85 catches and over 900 yards already. I mean, in an offense where every week defenses, all they want to do is take him away. All they want to do. Every week, nobody deep. I mean, God knows it's about him, right? Like, nobody's worried about DeMarcus Robinson getting deep. And yet, Tyreek Hill is probably going to have, you know, 1,500 yards. And I'm not even exaggerating, 120 catches? I mean, 110 to 120 catches. He's had an unbelievable season under the radar. And by the way, Mahomes is, I don't know what with Brady last night, it might have changed. He's either leading the league in yardage or he's second.
Yeah.
And it's 25 touchdown passes, and people are like, why is he terrible? Why is
he's
he not
broken?
Good? It's like
broken. He's broken.
I mean, come on.
That's what they're saying.
But I'll say Hill's been incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to go with Tyreek Hill as well, just because of the way that they've been able to move him around with people taking away the deep balls. They've been finding ways to get the ball in his hands, and he just makes such a big difference for this team. And in some of these tight games, has really bailed them out with his incredibly unique skill set. So I'm going to go with Tyreek as well. All right, let's go to the defensive side of the ball. We'll start with you this time, Bertram. Who's your defensive MVP for the first half?
Jeez, so it's really like who's been the defensive MVP of the last month, right? Because early, it was nobody. I think it has to be probably Chris Jones. I mean, just based off of he's been so great the last month. But I got to say, it's actually a hard call because you can make a lot of different cases. Like, some of the corners have played really, really well, especially, I mean, Fenton's been tremendous. Snead's been good. Ward was great. But I think Jones, it all starts with him. Like, when he's dominant up front, it changes everything about them. So I'll go Chris Jones.
I think it has to be Chris Jones just because of what he's done the last two or three weeks, but coming back inside. Yeah. And we saw when he missed some games because of wrist injury too, right? The defense just wasn't even close to getting home on the quarterback. I think it's got to be because it can't be anyone in the secondary, at least not now. I mean, you can make a case the defense has played much better since Gay has gotten more reps, but I mean, he's not MVP caliber for the defense. So to me, it has to be Chris Jones. I'm with you there.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you, Chris Jones. But I want to give just a special shout out to Charvarius Ward, because I think when he came back, there are a lot of things that changes that were happening. But he's been a really solid player for them. And that's that, you know, you get that extra player in there and everybody else gets better from having him back on the field. So I think he's been key for this defense and part of this turnaround. All right. Rookie of the year. I think this one's actually really interesting and tough. because the Chiefs have a couple of really talented rookies along the offensive line. Jeff, who are you going to go with?
For rookie of the year so far?
Yeah, rookie of the year for the Chiefs.
I just gave Creed off its play. I'll just say Trey Smith just for this reason. I think the physicality he brings to the offense, and you need a guy like that. If you remember when Quentin Nelson came to the Colts had a good offensive line. He came there, they became like a punishing offensive line. When you have a guy like Trey Smith, the rest of the offensive line wants to play to his level. They want to be as physical as him. They don't want to be the guy who's not finishing guys. And so to me, it has to be Trey Smith right now. Obviously Creed's excellent, and Creed will probably be an all pro. It's possible. But like, I think that Trey Smith, that the physicality he plays with, is really tough to match.
I was going to say Smith, but to be fair, I think Humphrey, like, to be a center and be a rookie, that's a really hard thing. Like that, you know, there's a lot that goes into that, getting calls and protections or anything. Obviously, with Mahomes, you're going to have some help there, but he's been phenomenal. I actually was talking to somebody in the league, like, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks ago, who said, like, he's not going to win Offensive Rookie of the Year because he's an offensive lineman, but, like, he, honest to God, could be the Rookie of the Year. Like, he's been...
Rashawn Slater would probably get over him just because of playing left tackle.
Awesome.
But Creed's fantastic. And, yeah, I am... Trey Smith going the sixth round, I still don't understand. Like, the medicals were fine. I mean, like, he had some issues, but he's been fine, clearly. Chiefs got – I mean, they hit a home run with him in the sixth round. I cannot believe they got him in the sixth round.
You know, look, yeah. I mean, obviously, doing this for a living, like, I remember, you know, Trey Smith, like, I knew of him. I didn't realize, like, oh, he's, you know, I didn't realize he was, like, the number one recruit in the country coming out of high school. Like,
yeah,
I didn't
2017,
realize
he was
that talented. And when they drafted him, I remember immediately my phone pinged and I looked down and it was you. And you're like, great pick, great pick. Just to be like, you know, and it's like talking to people on OTAs. I remember I reached out to somebody with the team during the OTAs and they're like, oh my God, this guy's going to play like immediately. Like, he's unbelievable. And, you know, normally like you don't hear that from like certainly they're going to pump their guys up, but you don't normally hear like some guy who's in the sixth round, especially on a team as talented as Kansas City, just be like, oh, he's going to play like week one. Like, there's no way we're putting this guy on the bench. I mean, it was evident with him and Creed right away. And
I'm going to go with Creed as well. Really steady presence there for them in the middle. And what's exciting for me, and I think all Chiefs fans, is these guys are just getting started. Like, they're going to improve. They're going to get more reps. So to be able to watch and see how this new line plays together, but particularly Creed and Smith in the middle there is going to be really, really exciting as they move forward. All right, last one here. Who's your most underrated Chief so far this season? I'm going to go with you, Verderam.
I got to go defense because I think we've really covered the offense and we've talked about the stars there. I think it's Willie Gay. I think nationally, Chief fans appreciate him, but I think nationally it's Willie Gay because when he came in, and by the way, my like 1B here would have been Nick Bolton. They have completely transformed the way they play the run, like completely. Gay, and this actually wasn't a running play, but there was a play last game in the third quarter. They, you know, Dak swung a pass out to Zeke on third and two. Any other linebacker on the Chiefs, there's no way in hell. Like, he turns the corner, he gets 5-6 yards, maybe shove him out of bounds. Willie Gay, like, caught up to him at the line of scrimmage and just wailed him out of bounds for a no gain.
Yep. Like,
that would not have happened with any Chiefs linebacker since Derek Johnson. There's no way that anybody, and like, Willie Gay wasn't even hard. Like, he just got there and just slammed him out of bounds. Like, all right, punt. Like, that, he is so athletic. And by the way, if you remember, he missed it, but he just missed picking Dak off in the second quarter of that game. And if he does, it's a house call. Like, he's walking to the end zone. He's so athletic. He's a game changer for them.
Love it.
I mean, I think you go a couple secondary players possibly, right? I mean, Snead and Ward and those guys are doing that. But, I mean, Ingram and his ability so far to change this defensive line's pass rush has been – I mean, you can't double – Chris Jones or Frank Clark anymore because you have the third pass rusher in Ingram who's still doing and playing well. I mean, I think in his, what, three games now, I think it is.
Yeah,
his addition's been wonderful for this Chiefs defense line. They have been better. They have been able to rush the passer better since Ingram came into the lineup. It's been three games, and those three games have been the three best they put all season up front.
Yeah, absolutely. It's getting very exciting to watch the Chiefs defense, which is, boy, what a turnaround that has been. I'm going to go with my guy Ward here. I just think he really saw what he means to this defense when he was out and how much he helped everybody improve when he got back. All right, second half predictions before we get out of here. I'll start with you again, Verderam. What is the Chiefs' final record going to be, and what's their playoff fate? Sitting here right now with full understanding that you could change your mind based on the next few weeks, but right here, right now, how do they end the season, and what's their final record?
I mean, look, I'll preface this by saying that people who are in the stream, and certainly the two people I'm talking to, know with me, I'm anything but a homer. I will kill them at the drop of a hat about just about anything. I don't think they're going to lose another game. I said that to Seren Petro in Kansas City. Actually, if they beat Dallas, I think they're going to run the table. And he kind of was like, whoa, I do. I don't think I look at it. They got Denver twice. They've got the Bengals on the road, who I respect. But if the Chiefs play well, they're winning that game. They have the Steelers at home, who can't score a point. The Raiders at home. The only game that I look at and go, maybe, is the Chargers.
Chargers, yeah.
But I got to be honest. I think if the Chiefs know that if they win that game, they're home free. They should have killed the Chargers the first time they played them, and that was when their defense was a wreck. I think they're going to run the table. I do. And if they do it, they might be the one seed. I don't know that anybody would beat them out. I mean, I don't think Buffalo's running the table. I don't think Baltimore is going to run any kind of table with the schedule they've got ahead. And Tennessee just lost to the Texans.
The problem for the Chiefs getting the one seed is they lost a tiebreaker to Baltimore and Tennessee. And right. So you have to basically beat them by – you have to get – and that's tough, I think, to do. So I'm with you, Matt. I think they lose at the most two of the last six games. And then in the playoffs, okay, look. I mean, to me, the only place I could see them going to lose is Buffalo. I don't think they lose to Tennessee again. They're so beat up. They're DVOA. They're 18th in DVOA, Tennessee. They're not a good football team.
Yeah.
Buffalo's defense is not as good as they've been, but they're playing better teams now, but they're not as bad as the Colts game, right? Like, I think playing in Buffalo with the weather, it could be a bad weather game, would be tough. I mean, Josh Allen seems to have regressed back to what he was in 2019. That's the only place. They're not losing in Baltimore. They're not losing in Tennessee. They're not losing in maybe again in Buffalo. That's about it for me, is where I see them losing a playoff game, if that's the case.
Yeah, I know it's really, really hard. I think they're going to go back to the Super Bowl if they're healthy. I do. Part of that is because I think the AFC stinks. I don't think Tennessee's that good. Baltimore is 7-3, give them credit. Like, they could easily be 3-7. I think if Kansas, with this defense, the way they're playing, I mean, I think they're going to go back to the Super Bowl. And look, it's so hard. They can have one bad game in January and that's it, right? But if you're saying you got to bet your mortgage, who's coming out of the AFC? Them, especially if I think they're going to run the table and be a one or a two seed, them. So, look, I like where they're headed. I think they've weathered the storm. And I really look at the rest of their schedule. And other than that Chargers game, I just do not see them having a hard time in these games. I do not think they're losing to Denver. I don't think they're losing to the Raiders. I don't think they're losing to the Steelers. The Bengals, again, I respect the Bengals. I just don't think the Bengals are ready to beat them in a game where if the Chiefs know they've got to win that game, I don't think Cincinnati's beating them. And the Chargers game's interesting, although, again, it's going to be Arrowhead West. It's 70% of that place is going to be Chiefs fans. So, we'll see. 12-5 certainly in play, but I will roll. I think 13-4. I think they went out.
I love it. I think they lose one more game somewhere along the way. They slip up. I could see them slipping up to Pittsburgh because of that defense. If they come out and they have one of those offensive games, it could end up losing an ugly football game. But I think they only lose one more, because if they keep playing defense like this and the offense gets a little bit more consistent, they're just better than most of the teams that they're going to be playing. They should watch out for Buffalo in the playoffs, though, because that defense has been much improved. And, that's a one game any given Sunday. They better be careful there. Before we get out of here.
George asking Pats, which I think are fair, because a lot of people put that in there. Look, I have all the respect in the world. I would not want to see them for one reason. Belichick scares the hell out of you and should, right? Like, he he can just have a game plan where you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, but Mac Jones, no, they're not winning the AFC with a rookie quarterback.
Well, that's where I was going to go. But like my ultimate thing is like, you're telling me Mac Jones is beating Mahomes in a playoff game? I just, that's not happening. I'm sorry. No. Like, and Spagnuolo, he's gotten a lot of shit over the course of this year. When he plays young quarterbacks, he typically kills them. It's so, there's so many different looks you get out of them. Mac Jones is not beating. If they do, all the credit in the world to the Pats. I would be shocked if Mac Jones beat them in a playoff game.
Same.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't see that one happening. One last prediction before we get out of here. And this one, this has actually become one of my favorite holiday traditions, is logging onto Twitter, usually sometime around Christmas Day, and seeing when Jeff's wife is dragging the tree out to the curb. which is absolutely hilarious. So Jeff always refers to a tradition like any other. What time does the tree come down this year?
So we'll get the tree tomorrow, as we do on Wednesday before Thanksgiving. And I don't know, between like 8 and 9 a.m., whenever she gets up and just is over it and just takes everything off, and we take the tree out and it's gone. Like, she's very practical. I mean, we're going to get it on November 24th, and in a month later, she's over it. She's like, we've done it. It's done. It's served this purpose. And it's dragged out there. People think we're weird. I don't care, but it is a very fun. And by the way, I don't even help her. She just does it herself. She just, I mean, it's so dead. It's, you know, so it's not very heavy by then. Yeah. And she just drags that thing out. And by about 9 a.m. on Christmas morning, the house is back to normal. It's lovely.
I love it. I love it. It's a hilarious bit you've got going every year. And I, by the way, just a beautiful home. That the shot you always have of the tree when it's up. What a spot for a nice big tree.
It's a great spot for a tree, and then it's a great spot to pull a tree down and drag it out from. It equally is an impressive location.
Yeah, I noticed that. I looked back at some of the photos today ahead of the podcast, and like a few years ago, she had a little cart it was on, four wheels. And then I think last year there was just a video of her just dragging it by the top of the tree.
We don't do the doll anymore. We just grab it and pull it out of there.
I love it. I love it. All right. And one more thing before we go. Number one thing you're looking forward to eating on Thanksgiving. Bertram?
Go ahead.
Oh, for me, Jesus. So I'm not a turkey guy. Like, I will eat it, but I'm not. Like, I love ham far more than I love turkey. I'm big into the sides. Like, I love mashed potatoes and I love yams. Big starch fan, obviously. And then also, I love a good apple pie. And I'm not, none of this one slice shit either. Like, especially bears and lions, I got to sit through that crap. Two slices minimum.
So I do like turkey. I fry my turkey. It's very delicious. I like the turkey wing. But my wife makes homemade mac and cheese. Like, the only time of year she makes homemade mac and cheese. That is what I live for Thanksgiving. And I'll be eating lots of homemade mac and cheese.
Yeah. It's starch madness. Starch madness. Yeah. I'm a bit, you know what? This isn't even really a special Thanksgiving food, but give me the rolls. I want the brown and serve rolls. A little hot butter on there. Dip it in the gravy. Can't get enough of it. My favorite Thanksgiving memory is my papa, before he died, he was notorious for walking around the table and swiping people's rolls off their plate. Nice. So I try to do that to my wife at least once a year. All right, everybody, we're going to get out of here. Thank you so much to Jeff Schwartz for joining us on our Thanksgiving special, the Arrowhead Addict podcast. Make sure you check out all the work he does. And of course, his podcast, Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You. For Matt Verderam, for Jeff Schwartz, have a happy, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We will see you next week. And as always, go Chiefs.